Ramping up your business? The time is near. You've given it heart, now get it in gear. It's Passage to Profit with Richard and Elizabeth Gearhart.
I'm Richard Gearhart, founder of Gearhart Law, a full-service intellectual property law firm specializing in patents, trademarks, and copyrights.
And I'm Elizabeth Gearhart, not an attorney, but I do marketing for Gearhart Law, and I have my own startups and podcasts.
Welcome to Passage to Profit, the road to entrepreneurship, where we talk with entrepreneurs and celebrities who tell their stories about their business journey and also share helpful insights about the successes that they've had.
Did you know that 2 in 5 Americans want to start a new business or are business owners? Well, we have lots of information to help them, too.
And we also talk a little about the intellectual property that helps them flourish.
So now, Diane Yu has Phoenix Global, F-E-N-I-X Global. She's a venture capitalist, and she's doing things a little differently. And we're going to let her tell her story. So welcome.
Thank you. So Phoenix Global represents over 150 funds that are actually woman-led, but we've scaled it out. And it's for those that want to commit to diversity as well. Including that, we also work with a lot of family offices and investors. And we really work with the community of investors driving demand for anything we see from early stage to late stage, pre-IPO, alternative investments, some commodities, and even trophy assets such as sports teams.
Wow.
I have been in venture capital actually since the typical route of MBA after graduate school. The fund itself, just on a side note, we have a $500 million fund that invests in Africa, actually, technology and globally. And we're working in partnership with a lot of the first ladies of Africa.
So what do you look for in the companies you invest in?
In this specific investment thesis, we're looking for technology that would improve the local African countries. We work together also with the local governments and partner with local organizations. We also give back to HBCUs here in the U.S. to provide a certification for venture capital. So we provide an opportunity for African students and executives to come and get an HBCU education in the U.S. fully paid for by us as well.
Is there an extensive program associated with that? It's an academic program. What do people study to get?
Unfortunately, they don't have to go through what I went through. I went through three of these programs.
Oh, my gosh.
And to get in, so for example, one of them has launched over 60% of all VCs in the world. Another one is partnered with an Ivy League like Stanford. So you get these, you know, great education, interaction with alumni and professors. And really getting into this, whether it be a network or certification or business school, it's all about one thing. It's the network, and you're purchasing that. And so we want an opportunity on our social impact side of the fund to give back to African countries and executives that are primed to go a step further. So similar to many of the programs that I went through here to get your education and further certification and get that network so you can start with more investment.
Network is so important, yes.
What kinds of companies are being created through your programs?
We don't create companies. We can advise companies. Mm-hmm. Definitely anything from startup to late stage, advise on what are investors looking for example. And I'll say, you know, there are a couple of things that I know that we're speaking to a lot of entrepreneurs today and your audience, and there are some biggest fails, I would say, on how to turn an investor away.
Well, so, we want to hear those so we don't do
that. Yeah, I don't want to make any of those mistakes. No.
So I can run down that as well. They're fun. I think they're fun for us because we see probably, let's say, VCs see hundreds, if not thousands, of deals on a yearly basis. And how much of that really is garbage or prime to have investment? So number one is lack of clarity. We always hear for these trigger words, what is the problem? What is the solution? When you come right into that pitch and you see us, you have very few minutes, you know, to really pitch us the hook, the problem. We're just looking for the right words. You could be the greatest salesman on earth and really fly through that pitch. But some people just don't understand. We need a lot of clarity on what is the problem. Mm-hmm. A lot of people will talk about the issues in their industry as an expert, but we still don't understand the problem solution that they're solving. The second is weak leadership. We see that often, where the CEO thinks he may be the answer to everything and doesn't hire out an incredible team or doesn't know the missing links to building out the right team. The other one is too much vision, too much fluff, but not enough execution. It's almost like a 90-10, 90% of the pitch is a big idea and 10% is ignoring. What is a go-to-market strategy for this? Overkill on buzzwords. There's overconfidence, but no execution. The next one is lack of a clear exit. So depending, especially on the stage of the company, what is the exit? What is the ROI for these investors? And lastly, ignoring feedback or challenges that we gave you, dismissing feedback might make you look a bit arrogant. And you may come back again. You know, one of the success stories we had is a woman came to pitch and she had everything planned out on her milestones page in the pitch deck. And she really threw a low ball to the investor saying, this is what I will perform in Q1 and Q2. And I'll be back in a year and give you that update. Well, she came back and she outperformed everything. And all the investors doubled down.
Dr. Puma, do you have a question or comment?
I was listening intently. I wish I had my microphone on, my recorder on when she just went through that. But
well, this will be released as a podcast.
I'll be watching this on YouTube and taping that and sharing that with my partners. That is very sage advice. And like most advice, it's usually straightforward and simple in front of you. But we all miss it. That was amazing.
Yeah, I think the problem solution piece is important because it's so easy for people who are so involved in their companies and their industry to not be able to communicate clearly what is the problem and what is it that they're trying to solve. And I think that's a great point. And you can't even run the business right until you have that clarity to begin with, right? Because that's kind of what everything flows from, is understanding the problem and understanding the solution. So I think that's something you want to get down pretty early in the game if you can.
I think the misconception is entrepreneurs, they're, you know, some of them are maybe a three-time CEO founder. Great. Well, they can come in and they should be able to nail it. Then there are those that are maybe tech engineers or even doctors. They're extremely experienced in their expertise, but when they come in, it has to be boom. You know, there's clarity in the problem. There's clarity in the solution because they can get so in tune with the industry and all this vernacular that we really don't need.
And that was one thing that we had heard. So we've been going around to these pitch competitions, all this stuff for years, was that, yes, the investors are interested in your industry, but they're more interested in your team and how you can communicate to the investors. So they don't need, for instance, to know how to read a CT scan, but they do need to know what problem you're solving, which was very obvious today. So if you were pitching to an investor, I mean, that would be a no-brainer, right? So what is the most important thing for you?
You know, we used to say it comes down to one thing, the founder. It really does. There's a lot to it. There's a lot of soft skill. There's a lot of character. There's a lot of reading between the lines. Because at the end of the day, you invest thousands to millions of dollars. And if they cannot be coachable, if they can't listen, you know, there's going to be a lot of litigation, for example, that could happen.
That doesn't sound good. I've heard that said a lot of times, is that you want somebody who's open-minded and willing to learn. And you do get a little nervous when somebody's in the room and they think they know everything, because nobody knows everything. And you really have to have a good team, and you have to take their input, take your shoes off, sit down and listen with empathy, find out what's on their mind, and soak it all in.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. On the flip side, as an entrepreneur, you know, one of the things that always gets me on my pet peeves is entrepreneurs come pitch to investors and they're not prepared. They haven't done the research on what is this VC known for? What are their exits? What's their secret sauce? Because when you're an entrepreneur, whether it be an ice cream truck or whatever it may be, technology, you want to go to the best VC who has had an incredible track record, not 2x, maybe 100x, 150x. As in, it's so many times you want them to invest in you because you'll be in good hands. They already have all the growth sales channels to help you out to a faster exit.
That is a really good point, and I've heard that before. And I know someone who's looking for a job, and they're, I put out all these resumes on Indeed. Should I do a cover letter? I'm like, if you're going to do a cover letter, go research that company, research the CEO, research what they're for, research what they're doing right now. Know as much as you can if you're going to apply for a job there, and then do your cover letter and send them. It's almost like applying for a job. I mean, you're asking somebody for their money to support you so you can do this work, right? And people should know all about you as much as they can. And you make it easy. Right. Do you have office hours?
Of course, office hours. But typically you don't always meet the GP, the general partner, meaning maybe the top dog of the firm. You'll typically talk to the face of the company, which would be the analysts or the associates, because they get the first blush of the 100 deals that are coming in. And so go through that, and then they'll pitch to their boss and it will go up the ladder. And we call it on Mondays. Don't call VCs on Mondays, because they're typically having meetings, these presentations from associates to general partners on here's my top three picks. That's going to move forward.
What do you say to somebody who has an idea and they want to do something with it and they're just starting from ground zero? What kind
great
of
great question?
What
that is like extremely ground zero all the way back.
Right. I want to do this product. So what do you tell them about how to get out there and do it?
Well, there's many ways to answer that question, but truly, is there an opportunity in the market? You're looking at the competitor landscape. What is a market opportunity? How difficult are the hurdles? And then you have to integrate technology. I mean, there are some VCs, but we're not known to invest in non-technology. We're known to invest in AI and technology. And once you get those buzzwords in, you really have to defend yourself. I have AI tech coming. Great, but what is the best use of AI that you have? What are you using it for? Because once you use AI, sure, you get access to a huge tunnel of funding versus not having AI. But going back, is there truly a market opportunity? Are you the leader? Are you the talent with the industry experience? Or do you have the team to come in and do that?
So I started doing the marketing at Gearheart Law because we weren't happy with the agencies that, and people that we'd hired, because it's such a niche thing. Patents, trademarks, copyrights, people get them confused. But how much marketing do you want these people to have? Like, should they have done studies? Should they have done focus groups? Should they be bringing that to you?
Yes. I mean, I'm telling you, we lift up the hood and we'll ask 100 questions. Because, again, we may be writing a check for X amount. We will go through every single, it's called a data room. So once we sign our access to the data room, we'll go in, and that's where the entrepreneur uploads every single hundreds, if not thousands of files from every board meeting to your P&L to everything, so that we can go through and catch those red flags. We will ask you, how many people did you interview to prove, or what was your pilot? If you say 10, we may walk away. If you say a couple hundred, then there may be some evidence.
Dr. Pooman.
It's really incredible. The one thing I never really thought of is the milestones and how do you get to market, right? It's challenging on the medical side. We never think about going to the market. You know, who deals with private equity? We deal with patients. But how do you construct those concepts or explain those concepts a little further?
Yeah, that's what excites me is, it really comes down to a lot of finance and numbers. And when are you going to hit your break even? Let's say you're a startup company, as you had mentioned. You have to go do your research, your R&D, have to prove it. And then you have to write your pitch deck, and you have to write these milestones to pitch to the investor. And on that, it's really driven by numbers. So within the first year, we look for, when are you going to break even, or when are you going to hit your first million? These are considered some milestones. And then you backtrack from there, and you consider, what are the growth sales channels that I have to plug in? How am I going to scale? But then there's a lot of other financial questions that come with that.
And it takes a lot of time to do that, by the way. If you're an entrepreneur and you're just throwing together a deck, but the deck represents all of your thinking about the business and why it's going to be successful and how you're going to get there, right? So that deck is really your blueprint for what's going to happen with your company. And then you have to convince your potential investors that this blueprint makes sense. It has a good chance of success.
Well, right? What's missing a lot from these pitch decks is the finance part of the deck. You know, the business revenue model. I'm always asking, where is your business? What is your business revenue model? You know, make it very succinct. But that all goes into this milestones as well.
So do you feel like if somebody came to you with a deck and their very first slide was, I'm going to start with the return on the investment and work backwards from there. Would you like that approach?
Yeah, it's not typical. I guess you could use it as a hook, right?
We've been to some of these and the people don't have a strong financial part. It's like they do, I don't know, half an hour and then 2 minutes is the financials. Yeah. And they have, well, we think it's going to do this. And they have this exponential curve.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's the investors writing, let's say, $1 to $1 million. They want to know, am I going to get a 5X in 1 year, 2 years?
It requires making decisions. And sometimes the people who are pitching the project don't really have the experience to make those decisions in the right way, which is not to say they can't be successful or they can't learn, but they don't have enough experience with the product or the industry to be able to say, oh, yeah, this is what the margin, I can sell this for this. Maybe it's a new product. Who knows what they can sell it for, right? You're kind of in a tough spot sometimes, I think, but you have to do something. And what you have to put up there has to be credible.
I would say in the state of VC, kind of going further from the early stage to the late stage, the VC market has really gone under some difficult times post-COVID, as people, our investors, our family offices are looking to invest in less risk. What's really hot is secondary market. And secondary market meaning late stage, pre-IPO, faster liquidity, And a lot of these companies are billions of dollars in revenue and definitely in valuation, but they're table stakes name. You know, they're Anthropic, OpenAI, right? ChatGPT, SpaceX. And a lot of these companies want access to that because probably, you know, like Canva, in the next, by 2025, there will be an exit. And if you looked at their last quarterly earnings, it's pretty incredible. So you want to get into these very limited access cap table.
This has been really valuable. How do people find you?
You can find us on my LinkedIn. That's fine. You can also check out our podcast, which is separate from Phoenix Global. We'd love to meet you as well as a guest on our show. And Identity Unveiled is a network of over 1,200 AAPI, Asian American Pacific Islander, C-level executives.
Diane, you, D-I-A-N-E, space Y-O-O, Phoenix Global, F-E-N-I-X. So thank you so much, Diane.
Passage to Profit is a nationally syndicated radio show appearing in 38 markets across the United States. In addition, Passage to Profit has also been recently selected by FeedSpot Podcasters Database as a top 10 entrepreneur interview podcast. Thank you to the P2P team, our producer Noah Fleischman, and our program coordinator Alicia Morrissey, and our studio assistant Rissikat Busari. Look for our podcast tomorrow anywhere you get your podcasts. Our podcast is ranked in the top 3% globally. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, X, and on our YouTube channel. And remember, while the information on this program is believed to be correct, never take a legal step without checking with your legal professional first. Gearhart Law is here for your patent, trademark, and copyright needs. You can find us at gearhartlaw.com and contact us for a free consultation. Take care, everybody. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.